Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.
Hey, we're thrilled to have you here tonight. We should have an epic debate. I'm the stand-in speaker for James tonight. And tonight's topic is evolution, evidence for God. Wayne will be taking the affirmative and T-Jump the negative. Each of the speakers' links are linked below. So I recommend everyone check that out. And we'll have a brief introduction. We'll get right into it. So, T-Jump, do you want to give a brief introduction of yourself, what you're trying to achieve in your channel, or what you're up to?
My name is Standing for Truth. I argue for creationism and that intelligent design is a real thing and totally not a fiction. And that's what I do on my channel.
Awesome. What's up, SFT? And Wayne Fillmore, if you want to give a brief introduction, that'd be great as well. Up a little laggy there.
All right, can you hear me?
Yeah.
A little. All right, how about now? All right, perfect. So I'm Wayne. I am a evolutionary creationist, not a traditional creationist in the sense. Definitely don't believe in intelligent design. That definitely doesn't work. But I'm a guest author for BioLogos. I'm good friends with Hugh Ross, RTB, that chapter. I am a former science teacher. Love teaching science, love physics, and I like explaining to people that you can be religious and you can believe in God and you can also accept science. Being religious doesn't mean that you have to be stupid. So that's what I'm all about, and I'm happy to be here once again, and let's have a good discussion.
Awesome. Looking forward to it, and I appreciate your introduction there. So, Wayne, you have a brief opening just to give your position for Tom, and then we'll go right into an open discussion for the rest of the time. And on your word, the floor is yours.
Okay, so the topic of the discussion is evolution, evidence for God, which I didn't necessarily pick, but hey, it is what it is. When it comes to evolution, people usually have two positions, right? We usually see these two arguments take place. We have the creationists who always say that evolution doesn't exist. Evolution isn't real. Only microevolution is a real process, which there is no distinction between microevolution and macroevolution. They're one and the same thing. Then you have the atheist who says that no, evolution definitely is real. Evolution definitely does exist. Therefore, God doesn't exist also, which both are pretty extreme positions. Evolution has nothing to do with God or gods or religion. Evolution is simply a process that explains how organisms have changed over time. However, there can be a philosophical framework around why evolution works the way it is. I mean, is it purposelessness is there a teleology behind it? And so I have the philosophical framework that God didn't just guide evolution, because evolution is still going on today. God continuously guides evolution, holds evolution together, and it is God who basically wound up the clock and let evolution play out. So us humans, and also other organisms that come after us humans, arrived on the scene today. Not sure how T-Jump is going to handle this or respond to this, but this is what I'm arguing. This is what I believe. And I don't, I will say, I'm not trying to prove it in the mathematical framework of things. I do think there are evidences for it. There are arguments for it, but I wouldn't dare say I have 100% proof. I don't think anybody has 100% proof of anything outside of mathematics. So that's my position. That's what I'm arguing. And T-Jump, you had the floor.
Yeah, you mentioned that evolution has nothing to do with God or not God. I mean, yeah, I agree. Evolution doesn't tell us anything one way or the other. So it's not evidence for God any more than look at the trees. The fact that there is something there does not mean there is or isn't a God one way or the other. You said you didn't pick the topic. I just kind of went with whatever James picked. What was the topic you originally suggested?
It was kind of similar. It was something like, do I even remember? I don't even think I remember. But James changed the topic, so we're here. Hey, this is where we're at, pretty right. much.
Yeah, so evolution is definitely not evidence of a God. If God is guiding evolution, then that means God created COVID, God created viruses, God created all those things that kill people, and God created the problems with our teeth that most humans died because of ingrown teeth at one point. God created the misused parts of animals that are just there for no reason now. That God created those apparently for some reason. You know, they're not there for a reason. So it doesn't really make any sense that God guided evolution. It seems like a completely random process, which is why there's so many mistakes and why things evolve and die. Like 99% of creatures evolve and die, because that's how evolution works. Natural selection. You have a bunch of random mutations. Lots of them are bad. Most of them are neutral. Some of them are good. The bad ones cause you to die. And so if God's doing this by design, then he's horribly immoral, because he just designed a whole bunch of creatures to just die because they're insufficient at living. So clearly this is not evidence of a God, at least definitely not a good one. Could be evidence of an evil God who just wants to torture things for fun, but definitely not a good God. So no, evolution is not evidence of a God.
So with that being the case, that's pretty much the same argument a younger creationist would argue against me. They would say there's no way that God used evolution or guided evolution, because evolution is a painful process and it causes animals to die. That's very younger creationist of you.
No, the younger creationists actually steal the scientists' arguments for every position they don't hold, and then they just reject the scientists' arguments for their own position. So it's really just the scientific argument.
Well, I wouldn't say that's a scientific argument as much as a philosophical one. You talk about like morality and God. What I will say is, so obviously evolution isn't perfect, right? Nothing in this universe is perfect. But I will say something can be optimal. You can use evolution, which is a process that causes things to die, for the better good. Like for example, I mean, we're using fossil fuels and oils and all types of things from things that die in the past.
That's working out great for us too.
Yeah, that's amazing.
No, climate change is probably what's going to destroy the planet. One of the top 10 contenders. So fossil fuels are not necessarily a good thing. When you bring up this idea that you can use a bad thing for something better, that only applies if you're not all powerful. If you're all powerful, then no, you can't, because you could just do the good thing. There's no excuse to use the bad thing to do the good thing. If you literally are all powerful, can just do the good thing. So the only reason we're allowed to do things like fossil fuels and take advantage of bad things is because we are limited in our power and couldn't do otherwise. So it's justified to use those bad things. But it's not good. It's not optimal. Like, we just don't have all power.
Well, it's the greatest possible good that we can do, which right. which isn't a bad thing. But with that being the case, you said evolution is a random purpose. It's a random process, and is people usually. Why is my email coming out? Hold on, give me 1 minute. People usually, let me click on this. people usually conflate randomness with therefore no purpose. That's not true. Something can be random and it can have a purpose to it. There was a colleague of BioLogos. She had a computer design and she wanted the leaves on a tree to fall more naturally, more randomly. And so she purposely created this computer design, this computer program, so these leaves could randomly fall off. The Monte Carlo algorithm on Wall Street. I actually trade when I'm not doing stuff like this. The Monte Carlo algorithm on Wall Street purposely is random, purposely changes again and again, so people can't change, so people can't cheat the stock market. So you can have random things, algorithms, patterns, things like that in nature. We actually use evolutionary random.
I totally agree. We can definitely make casinos that are totally random with a small percent difference to make lots of money. Yes, we can do. We can create design random things. Sure. But that isn't an evidence for God. So the fact that God could make non-random things or random things means that God could make anything, and there's no way to differentiate which one's made by God, which one's not made by God. So God could make anything, sure. So just like we can, okay? That's not evidence. Sure,
yeah. God can make anything, everything, whatever the case may be. But what I'm arguing is based on how these evolutionary mechanisms work, number one, I will say evolution is a very intelligent process. It's not like this, and let alone the entire universe is very interesting, I will say. But when you look at the process of evolution, evolution is rather a very intelligent design. I mean, it works through you know speciation and allopatric speciation and things like that. I mean, that alone is just it's amazing, right? But
not really. I mean, it's just there's random mutations in the genes, which are totally not amazing. And then they kill most of the animals if they make any change at all. Most of them don't make any change at all. And then the good ones happen to survive. Like, there's nothing intelligent about this. It's just if you throw a bunch of paint on a piece of paper, the ones that go down, like going downhill, are going to be the ones that are going to where the paint's going to flow the farthest. So this is not intelligent or amazing. It's just gravity. So there's nothing amazing about evolution. Is just like paint rolling down a hill. Of course, it's going to go down the fastest route, just like evolution does. If you have bad mutations, you die. If you have non-changing mutations, you just stay the same. And if you have good mutations, you get better and you survive and thrive. So it's just a random dumping of paint, essentially. And then the ones that go the farthest are the ones that survive. There's not really intelligence there. There's nothing intelligent about it.
Well, you conflated the fact with the philosophy. So that definitely is true. I mean, like, there can be paint thrown at the wall, but I mean, the fact that there's a person doing it intentionally, like, for example, we have abstract arts. There are art that's is purposely random. So it doesn't mean no teleology is behind it.
Yeah, but it also doesn't mean there is teleology. So that isn't doesn't support your claim. For it to be evidence of a God, you have to say there is teleology. So if it's could be is not evidence. Well, there could be a magical leprechaun that did it. That's not evidence of the magical leprechaun.
Sure, but I'm not arguing for a magical leprechaun either. So that's neither here nor there. But with that being the case, I will say even the way how humans evolved, even the way how I do believe that humans definitely did to evolve to believe in God, which is not a bad thing. The thing that differentiates us from the other animals, of course, is our intelligence. Aristotle said that man is the rational animal. And I will contend and I will say, I think the purpose of this evolutionary process was for us to get up to this point to where we can finally know God, so we can finally evolve, so we can believe in a God. We look in the past and there is evidence of our ancestors. They used to bury their dead in a religious fashion. They believed in God. I think it's very human to believe in God.
Evolution also evolved to give us delusions, hallucinations, fallacies, biases of thousands of different kinds because it happened to be beneficial to survival for some reasons. It doesn't make any sense to say we evolved for belief in God, especially since we're going to lose it pretty rapidly. The fastest growing religion is non-religious. So the fact that most of human history, I think 100,000 years, there was no belief in God. And then belief in God came about maybe about 50,000 years ago, at the earliest. And it's going to go away. And at least probably only in the next 10 to 15,000 years, there's not going to be any more belief in God. So it seems very strange that humanity evolution was designed for this one strange belief that really doesn't have anything to do with the rest of life, and seems far more likely that evolution happened to keep things alive because of entropy, since that's like literally what it does. It doesn't make any sense to say it was designed for strange God beliefs, especially since they're so wrong and proven wrong consistently.
Well, I'm not arguing for strange God beliefs necessarily. I'm arguing for the God I believe in. So that's kind of neither.
That's a strange God belief.
Well, no, I'm not arguing for the rest of those other beliefs, but all in all, like, as far as theism, we definitely did believe, so we can believe in God. Do you accept that? Is that something we can agree on?
Accept what?
Do you accept that humans evolved to believe in God?
Yes, we evolved and to believe in God in the same way we evolved to have hallucinations and delusions and fallacies and biases.
In the same way that we evolved so we can use mathematics, so we can use physics and science and make airplanes.
No.
Yeah, it's the same way. Humans, I mean, everything that we have as far as in our intelligent capacity, we got it because of evolution.
Right, and some things are good and beneficial in certain cases, and some things are not. So If it's a fallacy or a bias or a delusion, that means we have some imagination thing in our imagination that does not correspond to reality. And there are certain things like math and logic which do correspond to reality. And so those are not analogous. Saying that you have a hallucination and that's the same as math is not the case. Like, we evolved eyes to see.
Are you saying
so there's a difference between the things we can see that are actually there and the things we can see which are not actually there, which are the delusions and hallucinations. Those are two different categories.
So are you saying that believing in God is a delusion?
Yes, pretty much.
Okay. Could you prove that? Do you have any experimentation to demonstrate
sure.
this?
It's pretty easy. It's everything is imaginary until demonstrated otherwise. So if you want to assert an explanation, you have to demonstrate that it has some evidence to support it's not imaginary. And if you can't, then we can conclude rationally that it's imaginary.
If you could demonstrate that right now, you could win a Nobel Peace Prize and change the world. You could actually demonstrate that numbers are independent of the human mind. You could change the world.
What?
You can change the world.
The consensus in philosophy and every academic science is essentially what I just said. Like, no one really accepts God in any of those fields. So they already know this, but I'm not sure. Prove numbers. I didn't say anything about numbers. I have no idea what you're saying.
No, but what you just said corresponded with what I just said, and you can't prove what you said. I mean, like, you're spying it off, like, and you really believe this, but
what?
You can't prove it.
Prove that things are imaginary?
That you said about like three sentences before.
Imaginary? I can prove things are imaginary. I'm imagining a unicorn and it does not exist in front of me. It is there.
No, you said something to the fact that you can't demonstrate something to be. I'll, for people watching, you guys can play that back.
I said that things are imaginary until demonstrated otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Was that it? Was that the sentence or is there a different
thing? There you go. Things are imaginary until demonstrated otherwise.
Right.
Not necessarily the case. So numbers themselves are imaginary, like one, two, three, like those are,
yes.
Those in a sense are imaginary, but are numbers independent of human thought?
No.
Fairly.
No. Numbers are just imaginary. It's math is a language invented by humans to describe reality. So reality exists independent of humans. Math doesn't. Math is just like English. Math has sentences that are correspond to reality, like 1 + 1 = 2. They have sentences that do not correspond to reality, like E = mc² × 37, like doesn't correspond to reality. And it has sentences that are self-contradictory, like 1 + 1 = 7, and just like English. So English has sentences that correspond to reality, I am a human. It has sentences that do not correspond to reality, I am a space leprechaun. And it has sentences that are self-contradictory, I am a married bachelor. Like, it's just a language. Math doesn't inherently correspond to reality. Only some versions of math do, which is exactly why Einstein said something like, so far as math is certain, it does not apply to reality. And so far as it applies to reality, it is not certain. So no, math is just a language like English. Nothing is invented by humans.
Math is a language that corresponds with reality. And so we're taking real things that we do see in reality and we're writing them in the form of language. But
just like English, yes.
Yeah, just like English, but we need something first to grasp, which is reality. Reality is objective, whether you believe in it or not.
Reality is objective. I agree. Reality.
Whether you believe it or not. So the fact that, once again, I'm going to go back to, because we're kind of getting off a topic, but humans evolved to believe in God. Now, is it beneficial or is it not beneficial? You think it's not beneficial?
No, I think it was definitely beneficial. It's beneficial to lots of societies. Why does that? So are delusions. Delusions are very beneficial for lots of people. Why does that mean they're true? Like, yep. Evolution, Evolution evolved to have us have lots of different biases and fallacies and illusion, type one and type two errors. Like a type one and type two errors, like if we hear a rustle in the grass and we think it's a lion, we run away. And so if it was a lion, we survive. But if we hear a rustle in the grass, it's like, that's probably the wind. And but if it was a lion, we die. And so the people who think it's a lion and run away survive, even if it was just the wind. So we have this delusion to think there's agency in things, even when there's not, because it was beneficial to survival. That is a delusion. It is wrong. It is not correspondent to reality, but it does lead to survivability. So the fact that assuming that it was beneficial, just because it was beneficial, therefore it's true, is obviously false. There are lots of false things that are beneficial.
Sure. I'm agreeing with you. I mean, that's evolutionary psychology. Sure. But that doesn't mean that God itself is a delusion. And that's something that I hear a lot from a lot of people, not just yourself. But with that being the case, right? So you're saying so you're saying that belief in God is a delusion. That is a new one. I will say the only way we would ever necessarily know if God exists is if this God somehow revealed itself to people, which that's a whole nother debate. But that's why I'm a Christian. I'm a Christian because I believe God did reveal himself to people, one, through nature, and two, through the person of Jesus Christ. But when you look at the universe, when you look at evolution, evolution has a lot of characteristics that before I even go into that, I'm going to go into this, which is going to seem like it doesn't relate, but it does. Do you know how to analyze crime scenes? TJ,
how to analyze crime scenes? Somewhat, not well.
Okay, not well. Okay, so you live in a house or apartment or whatever the case may be. You have a room. So
I have a box. I live in a cardboard box.
Wow, sounds sexy. But so you live in a cardboard box. All right. So I'm going to say Praise. Praise has a room, and we could probably go in his room, and we can tell a lot of things about Praise, about the things he probably has in his room. We can look around the room, and we can see what Praise sure, is like.
That pink rabbit is very telling Praise. Like, we can tell, like, strange predators there.
Wow. So we can look around the room and we can see what Praise is like. We can see what makes him tick. We can see, oh, Praise likes to read his Bible. Maybe Praise. Are you a gun owner? Gun owner, Praise?
Absolutely.
I kind of knew that. So you're probably from the South.
pretty much Oklahoma Central. Yeah.
Yep. So, you can look in his room and you can tell characteristics about this person from things inside the box, that's an actual real detective game, inside the box. So when we look at evolution, there are certain things we can look at evolution that could tell us about nature, or could necessarily tell us about this God, if you want to go down that road. Now, my belief is that,
like, what?
Well, it's very eerie to me how some Christians, they believe the universe was made through long epochs of time, you know, seven epochs of time, and evolution works in this epoch stage as well, where evolution works over millions of years, long epochs. The universe was created over long epochs. And what do you know? There's obviously creation stories, multiple creation stories.
Well, you said that there's something in DNA that we can see that's like a room. And if we look at the room, we can make inferences about the person who lives in the room.
Not in DNA. I'm talking about just evolution itself. That's more like intelligence.
Yeah, okay, so in evolution itself, what is it about evolution that are the things in the room that we can see?
Well, evolution works over these long periods of time. And so 13.8 billion years to create the universe, 4 billion years to create the planet. What else?
That's not evolution. That's just cosmology.
So I'm zooming out and looking at the bigger picture. So looking at the bigger picture of things, it seems like whatever creative force you're talking about, whether it's God or whatever the case may be, this creative force, it seems to work over long epochs of time. Now, I'm relating that to, oh, wow, there are also creation stories in theistic belief where God or gods create the universe over long epochs of time. And it's not proof, but it's telling. Evidence can point in a certain direction. So I'm saying the evidence points to, wow, this.
Wait, so you're saying that there are stories that say God created things a long time ago, mm-hmm. and the universe is really old. Therefore, that's evidence that the God is real?
No, when you say evidence, are you positing that evidence proves something?
No, like, evidence is just something that shows one or that indicates a belief is more likely true than false. It doesn't mean it prove.
So what I'm saying is this is evidence that these creation and they're mythos, right? They're mythos.
So your evidence is that there are stories that the world is really old. And the world is really old, therefore that's evidence the stories are true.
No. So what I'm saying is there are stories that God works in long periods of time, long stages. And when we independently look out at the universe and we see how old the universe is, because the universe definitely isn't 5,000, 6,000 years old. The universe is older than that. It seems like the characteristics match, right? This God. In the same way that when I look into Praise's room, he has a gun, he has a Bible. So I'm looking, and I'm like, oh, this guy is probably from Oklahoma.
Okay, so let's say we're reading Harry Potter, and it describes King's Cross Station, the train station. It says, well, there's this many beams, and there's these kinds of trains, etc. And if we go, it's like, oh, look, there's King's Cross Station. It has all those things are exactly true. Does that mean Harry Potter is true? Is that evidence that Harry Potter is true?
No, but we also know that J.K. Rowling didn't write Harry Potter.
We can just pretend we picked up a Harry Potter book. We've never seen it before, and it's just there on the ground. We don't know who wrote it or whatever. And we read it, and it's like all blocked out except for like certain parts, like magic and stuff. And it says, here are the description of King's Cross Station. So we go to King's Cross Station, and oh, look, the description is right. Is that evidence that Harry Potter is true?
No, but we also know we know that Harry Potter is not a historical text. It wasn't written that way. But also, I mean,
that doesn't help. Again, it doesn't make any difference at all whether we know it's a historical text or not. The point is that there are words in the book, a story, and some of the words correspond to reality. Like, for example,
what genre is the book though? The Harry Potter, the genre is fictional, obviously.
Genre doesn't matter. So we have genre books.
Definitely does matter.
Because I can literally just give you copies of historical documents from ancient Rome where they give you the actual descriptions of the cities, and they have these legends involved where there's the Romulus and Remus, which is the foundation of Rome. So every historical document in history includes myths and legends and miracles and magics up until recent history. So we can pick any historical document you want. We can pick any description of any city you want. They're going to get it right. Is that evidence that all of the miracles and magic and mythical creatures they describe actually exist too?
So that's not what I'm arguing. You're going on.
This is my argument. This isn't your argument. This is my argument.
Yeah, but
my argument is
that's not what I'm arguing. I'm arguing something completely different. You're going on a tangent.
This isn't about your argument. I'm trying to understand an epistemological question here. So we have historical documents. Historical documents do accurately describe lots of things like cities and battles and emperors and people in charge and texts. Violations, all kinds of stuff. They have lots and lots and lots of correct historical facts that can be verified. And they have things like cyclopses and mermaids and Hercules and Romulus and Remus. Is the fact that they got some of the historical facts correct evidence of Romulus and Remus?
It could be, but we also need evidence of Romulus and Remus's existence. So
yes, I totally agree. That's a great argument. So the fact that the books say there's this God that created the universe really old time ago, and their own universe is really old, that's not evidence of the God unless you can give independent evidence of the God.
Well, the independent evidence of that God, that's why I'm a Christian. But we're not here to talk about that. How can you independently get observational evidence of a hypernatural being?
It's pretty easy. Just novel testable predictions. Like, for example, you could say, I believe in this super hypernatural being, as you put it. And if I pray to this hypernatural being, he will generate a gold brick in front of me. We pray, gold brick appears. There's evidence of the hypernatural being. Or I just talking to a Hare Krishna a few days ago. And they have the example of, if you say the Hare Krishna verse, whatever it's called, you can speak to animals and convince them to stop and move and whatever. So if you could say the Hare Krishna verse, and if you believe in this Hare Krishna God, if you could actually then talk to animals and make them do stuff, that would be good evidence of this super hypernatural being there. So any testable predictions would work.
Sure, but what if the characteristics of that God doesn't work that way? What if that God just doesn't care about you praying? Then what?
You could, that's up to you. So you would have to say, like, you have this hypothesis, you believe there is this hypernatural being. And so you have to find a way to show this being exists outside of your imagination, not just in your imagination. If your God can't do that, well, then we have no reason to believe it's not imaginary, and we can conclude your God's imaginary.
Well, and that's why we're having this discussion. So I'm laying out my evidence. And
well, yeah, so the evidence you've laid out so far was just people make up stories that the universe is old. The universe is old, therefore the stories are likely correct. That was your argument.
No, so my argument is that these creation texts talk about the characteristics of this God enjoying, they enjoy creating over long periods of time. The universe and a majority of the things in it were created over a long period of time. And it's very coincidental how Genesis account and other accounts talk about God creating over long epochs. The universe was, we find out that.
How is that not literally what I just said? So, there are stories that the universe is old, right? Mm-hmm. And the universe is actually old. So the stories are correct that the universe is old.
We found out that the universe was old. That's right. What I'm saying. We now we have the evidence. And what I'm saying is that, so, you know, it would be in the same category as the Greek philosophers. They first theorized about atoms. If you didn't know, Greek philosophers first theorized by atoms. And then thousands of years after Greek philosophers are discussing and debating about atoms and their robes, thousands of years later, now we find out that atoms actually do exist. Thousands of years prior to us independently finding out that the universe is epochs of years old, the philosophers and theologians, they already were arguing these things in their robes. So that's what.
Okay, what's the alternative there? So let's say you're a pygmy in the pygmy tribe of Malaysia or whatever, and you're going to come up with a story about what created the universe. Like, are you going to say it was created 5 minutes ago? Like you were just popped into existence? Or are you going to say, you know, I've been alive. I have these parents and they have their parents and there's this old tribe leader and he's really old and he talks about his parents. Maybe this goes back a little ways. Probably it's a pretty old earth. That's maybe that's how it was. Like, so there's not really a lot of options here. Either it was created really soon ago, like what the Bible and the Abrahamic books say, or it was created really long ago, like what Hinduism says. You don't really have many options there. It's kind of like a 50-50. This is not really impressive. Many religions predicted young, many religions predicted old. Some of them are going to be right.
Yeah, so the teleology of their argument, it's not just that the universe is over, that's it. But they're attributing a God to this old universe, and this God enjoys creating over long periods of time. But that's one of the evidence I lay out. And I think it's convincing. You cannot think it's convincing, obviously, but I think it's one evidence that is convincing and it is compelling. But also the fact that, like I said,
why is that compelling? Like, for example, if we said like the most accurate religion on the age of the earth is Hinduism. Hinduism said the earth is 4.5 billion years old. They were the closest one of any religions. Do you think that's evidence Hinduism is true?
That's one evidence in his favor.
Okay. You should convert to Hinduism then.
But no, that's one evidence in his favor. Okay. So now we have some more pieces of evidence that we need to lay out. And I mean, that's pretty much it. So I like, obviously in this conversation, like you're not going to leave this conversation and be an evangelical Christian praising Jesus. Obviously not. But
if you brought evidence, I would. Like, if you actually had real evidence, sure.
I mean, doubt it. Like, religious conversions take time, take years sometimes. So,
because there isn't any evidence of a God. If there was, it'd be real queasy. Like,
well, no.
If I believed in a God and I said God was real, and I can convince you really easily, all you got to do is pray to the God, say these magic words, and the gold brick appears in front of you every single time, you would be pretty convinced the God is real.
Yeah, but that's not how. If there is a God, that's not how that God works.
Right. So there's no way to differentiate your God from imagination because there's no evidence. That's kind of the point. Like if there was evidence, it'd be really easy to convert people. You just give them the evidence, just like you can give them the evidence the world is round. Convince most people really quickly.
Well, there's different kinds of evidence too. So like there's abstract evidence and then there's concrete evidence. That's why we're talking about these arguments.
There's only one kind of evidence. That's the evidence that indicates the truth of a proposition over its falsehood. So there's not multiple kinds of evidence there.
Which can be given in the proposition of argument. So Some things are not observational. They're philosophical. Some things are mathematical. There are different types of there are different types of truths in the world. There's mathematical truths.
There's the stuff in our head and the stuff in the reality independent of our head. Those are the two kinds. So if you're just saying about mathematical truth, yes, you can show that with purely propositional logic, but you cannot use propositional logic to conclude something exists outside of your imagination in reality. That you
it has to actually exist. I'm agreeing with you. It has to actually exist in reality, in the real world.
No. So you can't use propositional logic to show something does exist in the real world. You can't. That's not reasonable. Propositional logic cannot be evidence that something exists independent of your imagination in the world. Like, you can't use logic to conclude apples exist. You need empirical evidence that apples exist.
Yeah, but apples are a concrete thing. They're not an abstract thing. They're concrete.
Right.
You're not understanding what I'm saying. So with abstract things, right, you have to argue up to them. With concrete things, you argue down to them. It's abduction and deduction.
No. So deduction and induction, but abduction is just affirming the consequence. Abduction is literally a fallacy. It's just affirming the consequence, so it doesn't work. But just try to make this as simple as possible. There's stuff in your imagination and there's stuff in reality. And you need some kind of evidence to differentiate between the two. If you think like numbers are in your imagination, well, then all you need is imaginary evidence. Like, you can say 1 + 1 = 2. Okay, that's fine. That's perfectly good to justify numbers. But if you want to say that something exists in the world in reality, independent of your imagination, you can't just use your imagination as evidence. You need to reference something in the world. So if I said apples exist, no philosophical argument is ever going to justify apples existing, because I'm claiming they exist outside of my imagination. And it doesn't matter if I'm apples or unicorns, or if I say there is a platonic abstract object that exists outside of my imagination, no propositional logic is going to justify that. You need some evidence outside of your imagination.
I'm agreeing with you. You're preaching to the choir. I'm agreeing with you.
Okay, well, that would apply to God too. So until you can provide some kind of empirical verification, there's no evidence of the God.
So It applies to most things, but not everything, because everything in the universe is not concrete. There are things that are abstract. Like, you can't go to the refrigerator and get me a bottle of logic, right?
Remember, so there's stuff in our imagination and stuff in reality. Those are the only two categories. There's stuff in our imagination, stuff in reality. Abstracts are just in our imagination.
There are things in reality that are not concrete. They're not observational, but they do exist. Like, logic.
Logic is in our heads. Logic is in imagination.
Logic actually does exist.
No. Standard Encyclopedia of Philosophy, Classical Logic, very first sentence, logic is a formal language consisting of a semantics and a formal system of rules. It's literally a language, like English.
So you don't think logic actually does exist?
No, I just quoted you this first sentence of the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy on what logic literally is. It's a language like English. So English doesn't exist. It's just something humans made up. Logic doesn't exist. It's just something humans made up. But it describes something that exists, which is reality. Like, if I say the tree exists, those words, the English, the tree exists, that's just made, humans have made that up. But the tree exists independently of us. So logic and math are the words, like English, just the tree exists. The words don't exist, but they describe something that does, which is reality. So logic and math are just languages like English. They don't exist independent of human minds.
Well, humans discovered logic. We didn't create logic.
We literally created it. Literally,
logic exists outside of independent human thought. Or else people wouldn't be able to have a conversation.
No, you can have a conversation just fine with logic. Like, again, there's multiple logics. So there's not just one logic. There's lots of different logics. Like, there's different languages. You have intuitionistic logic, many-valued logic, quantum logic, fuzzy logic, standard logic, lots of different kinds of logics that all don't agree with one another. And you can speak in all of them to people and have different conversations with you perfectly fine. And they disagree on things like the laws of logic, standard law of identity, law of non-contradiction, law of excluded middles. Many of the logics reject those things. So no, there isn't like a logic. There's a whole bunch of different logics invented by a whole bunch of different people, and any of them could correspond to reality. And they're all just in people's heads. They're not a thing that exists in reality. It's just a language. Literally, that's the quote I gave you, is this first sentence of the experts in philosophy just telling you this. Logic is a form of language.
I'll have to take your word for that. But with that being the case, right, we all have to agree on certain things. So in order in order for us to even have this conversation, we have to agree on certain propositions and certain sure. Yeah. So, man, this is tiring, Tom. This is tiring. So, with that being the case, I'm going to move on to my next piece of evidence for evolution and God. So, you're about to say something.
No.
Oh. So, when you look in the New Testament, Jesus, the story about Jesus talking to the disciples, and they needed to pay taxes. And
give unto Caesar what is Caesar's.
No, that's not where I'm going. Okay. So then they needed money to pay taxes. And so Jesus says, go to the lake and go fish. Go put your fishing rod over the boat, and you're going to find a fish. And then you'll be able to pay your taxes. So they're like, I don't know what he's talking about. Let's go. Let's look for this fish. Let's go see. So they go to get into the boat. They get into the lake. I think they're in like, what? No, not the Sea of Galilee. They're in some lake. So they go. They take their fishing rod. They pull the fish up out the lake. And there's a coin in his mouth. Now, think about how more than likely that fish didn't pop out of nowhere. I mean, it could have, but that's really unlikely. That's not how reality works. Things don't just pop into existence. So a more rational approach is that fish had descendants, and those descendants had descendants, and there was a long evolutionary line that fish came from before that fish got to that boat. And so that's what I mean when I say it seems like God likes to enjoy creating things or interacting with creation over long epochs of time.
What does that have to do with the story of the coin?
You weren't listening, Tom.
I'm trying to follow your argument here. Definitely not following. So,
okay. So in the same way that the universe, right, is really old and you know, God created the universe, what, 13.8 billion years ago, that fish didn't just pop out of existence. That fish had descendants, right? And those descendants of that fish had descendants. And so the purpose of that evolutionary line of that fish was to get that coin to, you know, those disciples at that moment in time. So it was you're about to say something.
Yeah, a better explanation is somebody made the story up. That's much easier than purposeful evolution of fish that got coin in mouth. Like, even if it did happen, like, the coins are shiny things all the time.
How do you know somebody made the story up, though?
That's most likely what happened. Like, if miracles, magic, they're all not supported. They're just because.
How is that magic? There's nothing in the story that's supernatural at all. Like, it's not like nothing about that story is supernatural. There was a coin, there was a fish. They went fishing. There was a coin in his mouth. That was highly improbable. That's not supernatural at all.
Yeah, sure. Maybe he just got lucky and there was a coin, a fish who ate something shiny and it was a coin and they got lucky. And
Sure. But
it's more likely that they made the story up, because we see people making stories up all the time.
So, okay. That same line of reasoning is how conspiracy theorists think. The government has lied. Therefore, the government lies about everything. You should be a conspiracy theorist, Tom.
No, I'm going to go with the consensus of historians and biblical scholars who hold to it that the study of miracle claims lies outside the bound of a historian acting in their professional capacity. Michael Lacona, Historians of Miracle Claims, paper by 1997, something, blah, blah, blah. So the consensus in history is that any of those kinds of claims are most likely just made up and added later, I think. So that's not
a miracle claim. There's nothing miraculous about it.
I didn't say miracle claim. So those kinds of claims are just not supported in history. So most of those kinds of stories are just made up, like the stories of Hercules. Hercules isn't miraculous in any way. There's just spectacular stories of him killing a bull or whatever, a big bull, a really big one. Like, that's not miraculous, but it's probably made up.
Sure, but I'm not talking about Hercules.
Yes, you're talking about a different story where something very strange happened that is most likely just made up by a bunch of people in a book.
Sure. I mean, it probably was made up, but we don't have any reason to believe it was.
Except the fact that it's not reasonable to believe. That's pretty good evidence that it's made up.
I mean, what's better is somebody could say, I don't know if it did necessarily happen. But that's not even what I'm arguing. I'm arguing is based off of that account, based off of that story, it just seems very coincidental to me how this fish over long periods of time it was used for this purpose. And the universe itself, was made over long periods of time, which I believe was for the benefit and purpose of us humans.
So God created billions and billions of fish over 13 or however many billions of years, so that one particular fish would eat a coin and then give the coin to the apostles so they could pay their taxes, when he could have just like given them a coin, like just snapped his fingers and done it. No, but he created billions of fish, caused them to die miserable deaths where they suffered and got eaten by sharks. And all of that was so that this one fish could have this one coin and give it to the apostles so they could pay their taxes.
Well, yeah, that one fish had its particular purpose, but other fish and other humans and other organisms, they all have their own purpose. And in the evolutionary scheme of things, sure.
Like being eaten by sharks and ripped apart and eaten by humans and destroyed life, suffering all the time, miserable lives, eaten by parasites. That's their purpose?
Yep. And it's nothing necessarily bad about that. That's nature. Like that's how the universe works. Like it's not a bad thing.
I give you example A of why this is definitely not a good God. Evidence of a good God.
So overall, the creation is optimal. It works. I mean, death is a part of life. I mean, even God gave his son, Jesus, in death for us humans. So, I mean, like death isn't necessarily a horrible, evil thing. That's a part of life. It's natural. People live, people die.
There's this great story, The Parable of the Dragon by Nick Bostrom. It's a great proof of why that's wrong. So death is definitely immoral because it's non-consensual. So if you die without your consent, that's immoral. Like, so if God created this universe and added death and forced you to be in it, and you don't have an option to say, I'd rather not have death, that's immoral.
Well, that's a whole nother argument in of itself, but if we're going to go down that line. So it is argued by Leibniz that this is the best possible universe that God could have created. So would you agree that God can exist and not exist at the same time?
Sure.
Okay. So would you also agree that if God exists, there are things that God can't do?
Sure.
Okay. So one thing that God, being perfect, being eternal, God cannot create a perfect universe from the start. And the reason being is if Yahweh, if God creates another perfect universe, he in essence is creating another Yahweh. So he has a better idea. He creates a universe that becomes perfect. God creates a universe that can create itself. And now that this universe is slowly evolving and slowly changing, et cetera, which by the way, if evolution isn't true, this isn't directly towards you, but if evolution isn't true, younger creationists, then Jesus wouldn't be able to die for us on the cross if evolution weren't true. Because in order for Jesus to redeem the cosmos, he has to be thermally connected to the universe, which if evolution is true, we're all connected. If aliens exist, aliens can be saved. Younger creationists, because I know Ken Ham says that aliens can't be saved if they do exist. I don't believe that. But Tom, the look on your face.
yeah. The fact that Jesus has to be thermally connected to save our souls while he's being sacrificed on a wooden cross by the Romans. Clearly God couldn't have just snapped his fingers and done it. Or just maybe Jesus could have like slipped and fallen and hit his head on a rock. That could have worked too. But no, it had to be crucifixion. And he had to be thermally connected, apparently, which can only happen because of evolution somehow. I don't think that follows exactly the way you think it does.
Well, it's not traditional Christian theology, but based off of what we know now, I'm looking at the evidence and I'm finding a theological, philosophical purpose in it, which is completely fine. And so with that being the case, now that God, he creates a universe that can create itself, right? He then can, there's this Greek thought called theosis, where things become like
God. You said he creates a universe that can create itself?
He creates a universe that can create itself.
How does that work? So if he created the universe,
mm-hmm.
then the universe exists.
Mm-hmm.
So it can't create itself.
That can more or less, like, because evolution and all the, they're not creating things like from brand new, but they it grows, it changes. He creates a universe that can change. He lets the evolution of the universe play out, however that may be. In the same way how you can make a computer program, you can let a computer program randomly play out. But with that being the case, so your question was why does the universe exist or something like that? Oh, how come God couldn't just create a perfect universe from the start? There's this ancient Greek thought called theosis, and in theosis, right, you become like God, you become perfect, right? And so one day the universe will be perfect. One day the universe, one day God will redeem the cosmos unto himself. So he couldn't create a perfect universe. You can't create an eternal thing, a perfect thing, because then he would have to create another God. He can't create another Yahweh. He's unique. So what he does something better. He creates a universe independent of itself that can break down, that does have death, that does have suffering. So in the long scheme of things, he can make the universe a part of himself through this process called theosis. This is like ancient, like Greek theology right here, but there's the answer.
Okay, so could God have given each person their own universe and having they each have free will in their own universe?
I have no idea. I don't know.
So God created one universe with trillions of planets, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's all powerful, so he can create a universe with trillions of planets, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he could have like given each of us a planet, right?
Sure, let's say that. Sure, maybe. I don't know. I don't know. Where are you going with this?
So if he could have given each of us a planet where we can't be forced to do anything, or we can't be forced to do anything we don't consent to, that would be a morally better world than the one we live in, but he didn't do it. So obviously either he's immoral or incompetent.
Well, like I said, there are things that God can't do. Leibniz's argument is that this universe is the best possible universe that we could have lived in.
Yes, I'm familiar with Leibniz's best of all possible worlds, and it's completely insane. But so clearly God could have done some things differently. Like he could have stopped that one tornado or hurricanes.
Sure, just, sure.
And that would have made the world morally better, but he didn't. So he's obviously not moral.
Sure. But in the long scheme of things, in the evolutionary process of things, let's say God does stop that one tornado, you know, back in time. It could be that if God stopped one particular thing from happening in the timeline, who knows, maybe Jesus would have never died on the cross for us. Maybe you might not have been born. Who knows? I think the reason why things happen the way they do is because that's the way it had to be. Now, there isn't any way we can actually test this, but this is philosophy. So
there's no way anything could ever be different. It's exactly the way it's the only way it could be.
No, things could have been different, but this, the timeline of reality that me and you both live in, this is the best possible timeline we could have been in, or else God would have done things differently.
So it's impossible for God to have done anything differently.
It's not impossible, but this is the best way, or else it wouldn't have played out in the grand scheme that God wanted things to play out. So whatever that means.
Okay, so if this is the way God wanted it to play out, and God wanted Hitler to kill millions of Jews, God is immoral.
I don't think God is immoral. And I also don't think God wanted necessarily Hitler to kill millions of Jews. But in the same way that sharks kill their prey and all these other horrible things happen in nature, it's more or less, think of it as like it's a means to an end, pretty much.
That's a pretty the means to an end argument is used a lot by Stalin. But so God drowned millions of babies, but that was a means to an end. That's not immoral.
Are you referring to the flood story?
Yes.
I don't believe the flood happened, but I mean, sure. Let's go with that. I mean,
okay. Flood didn't happen. Sodom and Gomorrah. Did that happen?
Yeah, I think that happened. Sure.
God killed millions of babies in Sodom and Gomorrah. Or probably not millions, probably thousands.
Thousands
of babies in Sodom and Gomorrah, and that was for a purpose, so that's moral?
Depending on what their purpose was.
What does the purpose matter? Like if your purpose is to save humanity and you kill millions of babies, is that moral?
Yes, I think it is. Or else we all wouldn't be here. We would all be dead.
Yeah, so that's the least immoral thing you could do. Like if you were powerful, you could just save everyone and not kill the babies. That would be the moral thing to do. But killing the babies to save everybody else would be the least immoral thing you could do. So, but it's not moral.
Sure, but in a world where we have laws of physics and laws of decay and things like that, I don't think it's immoral for God to allow the laws of physics to play out. And I don't think it's immoral for God to, let's go at that line of reason. That's the least moral thing that God could do. So, I mean, either way, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, like I said, that's life.
So if God did the least immoral thing he could do, that still means he's immoral, because that's the least immoral thing.
Out of the realm of possibilities. And I wouldn't think that's immoral. That's the least immoral thing you can do, but that's the best possible justice that you can do as well.
Sure, but that means that it's immoral.
No, it's not immoral, because you're doing the best that you can do. That's the best choice out of the realm of the possibilities.
Best choice is to destroy cities with thousands of babies, and that's not immoral.
Depending on the reasoning.
Okay, if you think that works.
In the same sense where God forbid, let's say you had a little like Taliban child and you're in your cardboard box with a bomb strapped to his chest. I mean, it would be the least moral thing to do, sadly, is to take out that child with the bomb on his chest. Or we could just not kill the child at all, and like you and, you know, the Taliban child could be blowing the smithereens. I mean, that.
No, the moral thing to do would just be to disarm the bomb and save the child and not pull
the
if I'm all powerful, I can do it. Not a problem. I don't even need to be all powerful. I just need a bomb diffuser. I can do it. So the fact that you think an all-powerful God couldn't do that, couldn't defuse the bomb and save us both, means your God is very strange, very silly, that he's all-powerful, but he couldn't defuse the bomb and save the child and the person. But we can. So
there are things. Speaking of that, I will say, like I said before, there are things that God can't do. And so with God creating the laws of nature, he's made a covenant with those laws. So, you know, maybe there isn't anything in the laws of nature that will allow God to do that at that moment.
Okay, so God can't defuse the bomb, but we can defuse the bomb. So we're more powerful than God.
Maybe at that moment, God can't, you know, put anything in the system to defuse the bomb.
But we can, so we're more powerful than God.
Well, I mean, if you get to it in time, but sure, God could defuse the bomb. But I mean, I'm not talking about God. I'm talking about you, a Taliban child with a bomb strapped to his chest, and police officers or FBI agents, whoever, bomb diffusers. I mean, the best possible thing.
Maybe if we can get back on topic, that'd be great.
Oh. So with that, what is the topic? Oh yeah, the evolution thing. So, man, we went on a long tangent. Praise, how much time do we have, by the way?
Another 10 to 20 minutes. If you guys want to end it short, we could go to Super Chats, but we don't have many, though. So it's up to how you guys want to do that.
Okay. I'm happy to go to Super Chats. Let me see.
So Wayne, do you have any finishing comment or conclusion or T-jump, either one of you guys?
Not really. Well, what? I'm looking at the comment. Somebody said, God created the bomb. Maybe. So my finishing comments would be this debate was it was all in fun. I honestly chose to do this debate because, like I said, I always see Christians arguing against evolution and atheists using evolution as like a backpedal against God. So I figured we'd do something different, because I'm tired of seeing Ken Hovind on here. And I'm also tired of seeing an evangelical fundamentalist on here. So I said, you know what, let me just come out here and do something different. I'm not the best debater in the world, but hey, might as well give it a shot. But I definitely do think there are good evidences. There are good reasons to believe in God. And I will say, if somebody is out there struggling with their faith when it comes to evolution, evolution has nothing to do with a God or gods at all. Evolution is simply a scientific explanation to explain how things change. And, you know, whether a god or gods or deities or anything has anything to do with that, you can come to your own conclusion on that. But Young Earth creationism has made more atheists than any scientist or atheist can ever do. And I will fight Young Earth creationism tooth and nail. So, but it's been an honor to be here and talk with you guys, and maybe we can do it again.
Yeah, you should debate Young Earth creationists next time. That would be entertaining.
Yeah.
Appreciate that conclusion there, Wayne Fillmore. So we got a couple super chats, and you guys feel free to jump on in. Let's see here. Our first super chat is from Stupid Horror Energy. For $10, thank you, I'm not going to call her that name, SWE. And she says, evolution can result in some genes in a fetus to become female, so that a lot of her eggs will be defective. Some genes want to protect chromosomes from damage, while others want to break them. If you guys want to respond to that, go ahead.
Is that a question, or was that just like her just stating a science fact?
Yeah, I think that's just a comment. No. We'll just go to the next one. Let's see. This is from the Crawdaddy 029 for $5. Thank you for your super chat. T-Jump, while on your side for this debate, just because something has not been proven does not mean it's imaginary. OJ wasn't proven to kill the X.
Law isn't proof in the scientific sense. So if you can't show, if you don't have evidence something happened outside of your imagination, then yes, it's reasonable to conclude it's imaginary until you can actually show it exists outside of your imagination.
Thank you for your response. And this is another super chat from Stupid Blank Energy for $5. And she says, cancer arises and spreads by Darwinian process of mutation selection. Why would an omnipotent God create through such much pain and suffering? So I guess that's directed at you, Wayne, if you want to answer that.
So yes, there are a lot of things in this world, especially with evolution, that results in pain and suffering. I mean, just because of the laws of physics, right? Somebody jumps out of a window and gravity pulls them down and they die. So, I mean, in the same way, that's just the result of living in a world where we have physics. And evolution is a process that obviously it works through laws of physics, laws of decay. And, you know, why are there things like cancer? Sure, cancer is bad. The viruses, diseases are necessarily they're bad. But in the long run of things, God uses this process of evolution, like I said before, so that Jesus can be connected to us, so that Jesus can be born of a human, so that all, you know, life form and other organisms can all be related. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword. It's bittersweet in a sense. And so, yes, those things are terrible, and I'm not negating that, but there can even be good out of that. And so the way I see it, I think God uses evolution and the laws of physics in the bigger picture to bring people to himself, to redeem the cosmos unto himself and for his bigger plan.
Great response. You want to respond to that, T-Jump?
What was the question?
Why is there so much suffering? Why would an omnipotent God allow so much suffering through the Darwinian mutation selection, etc.?
Because he's evil and likes to cause suffering.
So, okay, so this one is from Caleb for $2. Thank you for your super chat. He might be a little trolling here a little bit, but T-Jump, why you scurred to debate praise? Oh!
Because I don't want any more my brain cells to be lost. I'm like,
well, actually, this Thursday, that's going to happen, I believe, as far as I know. James set it up. I know.
Oh, is that the 2v2 with Skylar?
Yep. I'm going to bring it, buddy. I'm just saying. Sunflower for $5. Thank you for your super chat. Let it be known that today several atheists were triggered upon being informed of that first world non-religious birth rates are at catastrophic lows. So you I'm guessing that's probably directed at T-Jump, but you both can respond to that if you want.
Actually, birth rates for pretty much every society is going down. Even Islamic birth rates are down by, I think, 8 or 9% since the past like 10 or 15 years. So everyone's birth rates goes down when technology goes up. It's just a fact of reality. Like if you have higher survivability rates for children, then you don't need to have 20 kids and hoping 5 of them survive. So when technology goes up and you're guaranteed that your child is going to survive for the most part, you don't need to have as many kids. It doesn't leads to less birth rates. It's true everywhere in the world.
Thank you for your response. So this is the last super chat we have tonight, which is amazing. We usually have a lot more. But it's from Experiments in Prebiotic Chemistry for $20. Thank you for your super chat. Just wanted everyone to know an artificial photosynthetic cell has been created in the lab by man. But wait! I thought that life can only arise from a supernatural cause. Ha ha! I guess that's a comment, but you guys can respond to that if you want.
Photosynthesis is the process of converting light to energy. That doesn't mean life. So the fact that we created an artificial photosynthetic cell doesn't mean we created a living cell. It's not quite the same thing.
Yeah, and also, like, I will say that anything we do in a lab, obviously, we're recreating the same environmental pressures and conditions. And if we were to recreate any type of biological life in the lab, then it would be synonymous with actual life being created in the prebiotic earth or the ancient earth. It wouldn't necessarily have anything to do with a god necessarily. That's outside of the realm of science. It's irrelevant.
Gotcha. So that concludes the super chats right now. I think we're probably going to shut her down here in the next minute or so if no one gets any more super chats. Is there anything you guys want to end with? Any remarks about the debate? Do you have anything coming up or do you just want to shut her down? It's up to you guys.
Sounds good to me. I'm going to get some food.
Yeah. So, debate was pretty fun or discussion pretty fun at either one. But with that being the case, I'll go back to T-Jump's point he made. He said until you can prove anything is imaginary or something. T-Jump, what did you say?
Imaginary until demonstrated otherwise.
I think the person who brought up the thing about OJ, I think that was funny, but also pretty accurate. I don't think that is the case. I don't think something is imaginary until demonstrated otherwise. You might not have enough evidence for it, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's not true. You can posit something and just not have enough evidence for it to be considered true. So I do think the God hypothesis, I don't think people will ever be able to necessarily prove that God exists, except for in a Christian worldview. But I think the better argument should be a position may be weak until you bring further evidence for it, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen or it's not true. So
thank you very much. There's waiting for that concluding remark on the debate, but you have actually a question that came in. So for Wayne, this is from Pepper Talks. How do you decide which stories are factual and which are fictional?
So I go based on how the ancient authors interpreted the Bible. So when you do Semitic studies, you find out what the authors believed about different things and also the language. So I'll give you an example. At the Adam and Eve account, in your American Bible, there are certain things in the language that it doesn't have. So Adam in the Hebrew, it can mean a man or it can mean the humans, Ha-Adam. Now, my name is not the Wayne. My name is Wayne. So a lot of times in the Genesis account, you have the man, Ha-Adam. So Adam isn't necessarily a name. Then you look at things like, for example, in the book of Job. I don't think the book of Job is historical, but we have we have these sentences again and again where it says, "And I alone have escaped to tell you, and I alone have escaped to tell you." You see this in Genesis 2. And then God said, "Let there be light." When you see repeating sentences like that over and over again, that usually means in ancient Hebrew, it's a poem. So it depends on what the ancient authors thought. You want to look at the language, and you want to look at the culture to see what they believed about the stories or not, or how would an ancient person communicate something allegorical to their audience. I don't care what a 21st century younger creationist or 21st century evangelical thinks. I care about what the first century authors believed about the text.
So if they believed it was true, would you believe it?
They probably did believe it was true, but not in the same way we believe.
No. Like if the ancient authors thought the story was true, and you can show that by the way they wrote it, would you believe that it was true because they thought it was true?
Sure, I would believe it's true, and I do. So I believe the Genesis story is true, but not in the same way people today. So like Genesis is a mythos. It's an allegory. It's supposed to relate how people are separated from God because of our sin. I think that's true.
Awesome. So I think that's probably going to end it here. Unless anyone has any last questions they want to ask real quick, and we'll probably shut her down here. I guess not. Okay, so I appreciate everyone engaging in the chat tonight. Throw their super chats and our interlocutors. Oh, we just got a super chat from Dave Garr. Nice work tonight, everyone, including praise. I enjoy. Well, thank you, Dave. That was nice compliment there. Appreciate that. We also appreciate your super chat. You guys want to respond to that or?
Thanks.
So, yeah, we're going to shut her down now. Keep sifting the reasonable from the unreasonable.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.